Sup, you beautiful bastards. You're watching the Philip DeFranco Show, and we got a lot of news to talk about today. We break down the insanity that was the Drake versus Kendrick feud playing out this weekend and all the allegations. Sony is now backing down and apologizing after getting a severe backhand from gamers this weekend. The tragic and bizarre situation around a South Carolina's pastor's wife's death being investigated. And what's actually happening with Israel's military calling on Palestinian civilians to evacuate parts of Rafah while Hamas is saying they're agreeing to a ceasefire deal. And then there's even more we got to talk about today, so just buckle up, hit that like button to let YouTube know you love these big daily dives into the news, and let's jump into it.
Starting with,
Drake is a pedophile and Kendrick Lamar is an abuser. Those are two of the biggest allegations that have come out of this ongoing feud we've seen. Which, by the way, things have been moving so fast in this, I wouldn't be surprised if by the time this episode gets up, Kendrick's released a full diss album. And the album cover is like a photo of Drake shaving from outside of a window. Because while we talked about this last week, over the weekend, five more tracks dropped. With everyone that's been living for this absolutely feasting. We're talking about nearly half an hour of new music. Which on that note, like, we're not gonna go into every single detail about these songs. I'll leave that to the channels that have been dropping 60-minute breakdowns of each song as they've been coming out. Right, my main job is to try to make this consumable, even though I've personally been consuming all of this like it's a true crime podcast. And on another note, we're only gonna be playing Kendrick's music just because right now it looks like he's not copyright striking anyone. So if you're wondering why we're just playing him, that's why. But to get to some of the big claims, we'll start with the song 616 in LA, which Kendrick put out on Friday morning, suggesting that Drake's team is turning against him and that he is an operative on the inside. But then later that night, Drake shooting back with a song called Family Matters, where he dove into Kendrick's relationship with his fiance, suggesting infidelity, then hurling domestic violence allegations by saying they hired a crisis management team to clean up the fact that you beat on your queen. The picture you painted ain't what it seemed. Also saying that one of Kendrick's kids isn't actually his. But then, before most could even post their takes about this song on Twitter, Kendrick dropped a response titled Meet the Grams. Like, Drake dropped As I Got to the Movie Theater to Watch The Fall Guy, and Kendrick responded before the previews were done. In a Meet the Grams, Kendrick addressed members of Drake's family one by one. Right, starting with his son, with Kendrick apologizing that he has to grow up with Drake as his dad. Also claiming Drake has a secret daughter, saying,
Dear baby girl, I'm sorry that your father not active inside your world. She'll be teaching you timetables or watching Frozen with you, or at your 11th birthday singing poems with you.
Kendrick also, let's say, strongly suggesting that Drake employs sex offenders at his label and is a predator himself. But then Kendrick on Saturday night going, I don't even need you to respond, dropping another one. And it felt like with him putting out Not Like Us, that one, he was taking on the criticism that he had not dropped something that you could dance to. Because I gotta say, it was easily the most danceable song in just this whirlwind of releases. But it's also a weird song to dance to because it has lyrics like
Certified lover boy, certified pedophiles. Say Drake, I hear you like I'm young. Ain't you tired? Trying to strike a chord and it's probably A minor.
As well as Kendrick going to the well again, saying that Drake is a culture vulture, saying he's not a colleague, he's a colonizer. And then all of that bringing us to the latest song, at least as a recording, The Heart Part 6 that Drake put out. Right, and this song prompted just a metric fuck ton of discourse. Right, first, Drake denying that he has a secret daughter, claiming that his team fed Kendrick that false information to see if he would bite. With him also denying being a pedophile, saying this Epstein angle was the shit I expected. With Drake continuing, if I was fucking young girls, I promise I'd have been arrested. I'm way too famous for this shit you just suggested. Only fucking with Whitney's, not Millie Bobby Brown's, I'd never look twice at no teenager. Right, and all of that elicited a ton of responses. Right, especially because it comes as there's long been claims or rumors about Drake having inappropriate relationships with underage girls. And a lot of people just thinking those lyrics aren't how you shut it down, writing things like, I'm too famous to be a pedophile is crazy considering Weinstein, Epstein, Cosby, R. Kelly, the list goes on. And if at any point in your life you have to say, I expected you to compare me to Jeffrey Epstein, then you should immediately reflect on the choices you made to get to that juncture. Along with bringing up Millie Bobby Brown on that track when Kendrick never mentioned her as the most telling slip-up. But also, that wasn't even the part of the song that ignited the most controversy. Right? Because in that song, Drake also said, Mother wait a second, that's that one record where you say you got molested. Aw, fuck me, I just made the whole connection. That's why these pedophile raps is shit you so obsessed with, it's so excessive. Right, Drake essentially saying Kendrick's so obsessed with calling him a predator because he himself is a victim of child sexual abuse. But the thing is, in that bit, Drake appears to be referencing Kendrick's song called Mother, I Sober from 2022. And in that, Kendrick sings about his family's history with sexual abuse, but when it comes to himself, he says, family ties, they accused my cousin. Did he touch you? Kendrick never lied, but no one believed me when I said he didn't. Right, so Kendrick saying there was an accusation, but he wasn't molested. Right, and so with that, you have a number of people saying not only did Drake fully misunderstand that song, but also his choice to seemingly make fun of Kendrick under the false notion that he was a survivor of abuse is disgusting. Writing, you hate pedophiles because you got molested is the worst angle I have ever heard in my life. And using child molestation defamation accusations and mocking real victims of it is just tactless. Right, and while obviously you have people in both camps, the general online consensus right now is that Kendrick's winning this battle. Everything's like, nah, Drake, even trending on Twitter this morning. With Kendrick's two songs top in Spotify's charts right now, people comparing the view and like to dislike counts on YouTube. Right, but all of this is there's still a ton of people coming to bat for Drake. Some dismissing the claims against him, arguing what Kendrick has said is just as bad, saying that Kendrick shouldn't get off easy from these allegations that he abused his fiance. And as far as maybe why that seems to be taking a back seat with a lot of people, you have some saying that it's because no one believes Drake right now and he's already gotten stuff wrong. And others adding, people don't want to believe anything Drake is saying about Kendrick, yet have no problem believing what Kendrick is saying about Drake, which is probably untrue. Kendrick is exposing a cultural reality that people don't trust Drake. You can't fight people's feelings. Drake lost. He lost because, fair or not, no one cares if anything he's saying is true. But then also, all of this is playing out as there are a number of people that aren't really taking sides as much as, you know, a number of people are saying, you know, if you pull back from this, you pull away from the fun aspects of when famous people are having drama, that the things that are being rapped about, they're serious allegations. They are things that people literally go to jail for. But instead of seeing possibly criminal investigations, we're kind of just seeing people crip walk to allegations of someone being a pedophile and someone beating their fiance. But again, that's just kind of where some of this discourse is right now, some of the claims. And with all that, I gotta pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts with this whole back and forth in the situation in general? And then we need to talk about Pastor John Paul Miller, because this whole situation starts with him giving a totally normal sermon to his congregation in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But then at the very end, he drops this 2,000-pound bomb on them.
I got a call late last night. My wife has passed away. And yeah, it was self-induced. It's all I can. Yeah, I'm just kind of going on adrenaline right now. So y'all pray for me and my kids and everybody. And she wasn't, y'all knew that she wasn't well mentally, and that she needed her medicine that was hard to get to her.
Right, so reportedly, police found his wife's 30-year-old Micah Miller's body on Saturday, April 27th. She was in the Lumber River State Park, about an hour's drive from Myrtle Beach. But despite John Paul's claim that she took her own life, police haven't released her official cause of death, and they're still investigating what happened. Also, if you ask Micah's friends and family, her death smells a lot less like a suicide and a lot more like murder. With her friend writing on Facebook, "I talked to her multiple times in her final week here on Earth. She was making plans to get her hair cut, getting help with her car payment because she was a little short after paying her divorce lawyer, and planning to meet us for the second service at church on Sunday. My final text with her on Friday at 9:19 p.m. was a woman making plans to live. What happened between Friday night and Saturday?" Right, and as far as that divorce lawyer part, Micah actually filed for divorce back in October, though the case there was consensually dismissed in February. Though according to Fox News, she filed three different separate support and maintenance requests since last year, with those allowing one spouse to receive court-ordered support from another spouse without officially divorcing, with the last one filed on April 16th, just days before her death. Also notably, in March, Micah posted this video with a caption, "Please share this with anyone struggling with leaving a dangerous situation.
God hates divorce because it hurts people. But does abuse hurt people? How do you think God feels about that?"
And reportedly, in two police reports that same month, Micah said that her tires were punctured by a sharp piece of metal twice in 1 week, with her believing that it was done by a suspect whose name is redacted and who had a history of doing similar things to her. With her also reportedly noticing strange activity, and she believed that people were following or watching her. And then later that morning, while she was at a gas station, the suspect reportedly pulled up next to her pump and tried to talk. But there, she told him to go away, and when she took out her phone to record, he sped away, with him later returning when she was at a nearby car dealership and then calling her from an unknown number. At which point, Micah told an officer she was afraid for her life, explaining that she blocked the suspect's number but still received calls and texts from other numbers. And then, after the cop left, Micah contacted him and said the mechanics found a tracking device on her car. Right, so we don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to fucking connect the dots here, which is why you had dozens of people protesting outside the church over the weekend and the hashtag Justice for Micah spreading on social media. But on the other side of this, John Paul claims that Micah was open about her mental health struggles for years, with him telling ABC,
"She had struggled with suicide before, and each time, you know, helped her through it, took her to her doctor, and we got through it, and everything was fine. And she even gave a few testimonies here at church. We have on video of times where she had battled suicide, but God took care of her and got her through it."
But with all that said, right now, we have to wait for the police to finish their investigation. Though until then, of course, I gotta pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts here? And then, you know, it's hard giving up things that we enjoy, and it sucks. But if you tweak your brain a little bit, it's not about giving it up. It's more like switching it up, right? Switching it up to break that bad habit that you have, it can be easier thanks to the fantastic sponsor of the PDS,
Fumes.
Because, you know, Fumes, an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and more enjoyable. And they offer different flavors from orange vanilla, crisp mint, which I found quite refreshing, and sparkling grapefruit. Really, though, I didn't know what to expect, but I was surprised at how flavorful it was. And the fidgeter in me loves the movable parts and magnets. It's balanced just right, keeps your fingers busy, which helps with anxieties that come with these types of changes. You can even adjust the airflow to your liking. I also like the magnetic stand that they have for your fumes, so there's no more losing it around the house. And that's it. You just breathe in naturally flavored air through an award-winning device. No artificial flavors, nasty chemicals, or batteries involved, just flavored air. And Fume has served over 300,000 customers, and you can be the next success story. For a limited time, you can go to tryfum.com/DeFranco and use code DeFranco to get a free gift with your journey pack. That's tryfum.com/DeFranco, code DeFranco.
And then,
y'all, Sony just got smacked in the face by an army of gamers. And specifically, what I'm talking about is that Sony was just forced to back down from arbitrary account requirements after it nearly killed Helldivers 2, right, one of its most recently successful games. And notably, Helldivers 2 being a hit was kind of a surprise. Right, currently, this constantly memed about third-person shooter, everyone goes, oh yeah, people love it. But when the game launched, like, it was kind of a surprise. I mean, initially, there wasn't nearly enough servers to accommodate all the players, which is, yeah, granted, a good problem to have if you can fix it. But also notably, a big part of the success was that the game was available on both PlayStation 5 and PC via the Steam store, and players from both could play with one another. But in a now-deleted tweet on Friday, PC players were told that they would need to link a PlayStation Network account to their game in order to continue playing it by next month. And the backlash here was immediate and for a variety of reasons. Right, for many, it was simply that Sony has a horrendous record keeping its user data safe. With, for example, one review on the game's Steam store highlighting 7 data breaches linked to compromised PlayStation Network accounts. And that data can be really sensitive, like addresses and official government IDs. You also had notable people in the space sounding off on it. With, for example, Mudahar from Ordinary Gamer summing up what a lot of users felt when he said, "Fucking hate this trend of having multiple accounts and services for every online game I want to play." Although you had others noting that it's not unheard of in the industry with games like Sea of Thieves and Halo Infinite requiring a Microsoft account on top of whatever store account you use to buy the game. And as a matter of fact, this fact was used by some to claim that critics of Sony's decision were being a bit hypocritical as they didn't seem nearly as angry about that. And users also felt that even though the Steam store did say that a PSN would eventually be needed, it was kind of hidden. Which was also compounded by the fact that while Steam is available in a ton of countries, PlayStation Network isn't. So there was actually a sizable number of players who bought Helldivers 2 that would no longer be able to access the game because they couldn't get a PlayStation Network account. And that fact, in particular, set a lot of people off, like with Thor from Pirate Software, who wrote, "Removing access from Steam players unless they make a PSN account and link it months after release is absurd. Review changed to negative, and I have filed for a refund." And when those countries were officially cut off over the weekend, he added, "Sony has now removed access to Helldivers 2 in every region that cannot make a PSN account. This denies access to every player that bought the game in those regions over the last several months. You can no longer buy the game in a number of currencies tied to those regions." In closing, "Never seen a golden goose killed so publicly in my life." Right, and all of this leading to the game's Steam review going from overwhelmingly positive to overwhelmingly negative, which is a massive deal because most of the game's players are on PC. Also, something that gamers had a little more of a mixed opinion on is how much blame should be given to the game's developer, Arrowhead Studio. You know, with some saying things like, "I think it's important to remember that with everything going on around Helldivers 2, their studio, Arrowhead, is not to blame. Arrowhead has never been an indie studio, despite claims otherwise, and this falls entirely on the publisher getting too involved." Though that, as others countered, the Helldiver devs were fully aware of the PSN requirements for 6+ months, yet the narrative will be to blame Sony. Microsoft, Ubisoft, Blizzard all have this same policy on multi-plats. Arrowhead Studios' blatant incompetence turned a small problem into a disaster, in my opinion. And so on one hand, you have people saying Arrowhead made Helldivers 2 and they could have better informed gamers about the PSN requirement. But on the other hand, as Arrowhead's CEO pointed out, they don't have any say in how the game is sold. However, he did also take quite a bit of accountability and tweeted, "I do have a part to play. I am not blameless in all this. It was my decision to disable account linking at launch so that players could play the game. I did not ensure players were aware of the requirement, and we didn't talk about it enough. We knew for about 6 months before launch that this would be mandatory for online PS titles." However, there is very good news at the end of all this, and that is Sony has backed down. Right, the requirement to link Helldivers 2 to a PSN account, it's officially been dropped. And it also right now doesn't seem like it would be coming back, with a company tweeting last night, "Helldivers fans, we've heard your feedback on the Helldivers 2 account linking update. The May 6th update, which would have required Steam and PlayStation Network account linking for new players and for current players beginning May 30th, will not be moving forward." And adding, "We're still learning what is best for PC players, and your feedback has been invaluable. Thanks again for your continued support of Helldivers 2, and we'll keep you updated on future plans." And so we've since seen this decision being widely celebrated-ish. You know, obviously fans are excited this won't be a requirement anymore, but as Thor pointed out, while this is a victory for the players, you've left a lasting stain on your brand as a publisher. Many people have very little reason to trust Sony going forward. Moving the business before you understand the player base is never the right choice. So right now, one of the big questions is, what will this game look like, let's say a week from now? Or will this cause players, fans of the game who vowed to leave the game, to come back? Is this going to have a lasting impact on the player base, or will we look back and go, oh, remember that stupid speed bump? But to look at Sony's double back here, I think the thing that is undeniable is that shows that players have power together. And it's obviously easy to say this looking back and like seeing what a disaster this was. But at the very least, it seems like Sony could have at least tried to incentivize people and make it optional to connect a PlayStation Network account. Because they obviously knew people were going to hate this. That's why it wasn't there at launch. So why not make it optional and give people like super credits for attaching an account? Like, did you think that the uniquely unified and passionate fan base that you created was going to like this? But ultimately, where I'll end this, I got to pass the question off to you. If you're someone that's a part of this community, or just you like gaming in general, what are your thoughts here?
And then,
so the big news about Israel and Gaza today, it was initially just going to start with how Israeli military told Palestinian civilians in eastern Rafah to evacuate immediately. But also now, as of recording this story, Hamas has said that it has accepted a ceasefire proposal. So let's break down what the hell is going on. Right, so Israel made that announcement this morning ahead of an expected Israeli offensive, one that notably the White House, as well as the UN, WHO, and other multinational organizations have said could have catastrophic humanitarian consequences. And to that point, in the 7 months since the war began, Rafah has become one of the most crowded places on earth. Right, there are 1.2 million people currently sheltering in Rafah, and most of them fled from other parts of the Gaza Strip, with them now living in tents and without access to sufficient water, food, and medicine. And notably, those who are being asked to evacuate have been told to go to a small stretch of coastal scrubland, an area already hosting several hundred thousand displaced Palestinians. And so specifically, it's about 100,000 civilians that are being asked to evacuate. And this, as the IDF says, that about 5,000 to 8,000 Hamas fighters are hiding there, with them saying that it's the group's last holdout in Gaza. And a spokesperson for the IDF, while sharing evacuation instructions in Arabic along with an animated map, had said that the IDF will act with extreme force against terrorist organizations in your areas of residence as it has done so far. Anyone who is close to terrorist organizations puts his life and the life of his family at risk. And notably, as I touched on, there has been near universal condemnation from world leaders, the UN, and international organizations. Right, you have the French Foreign Ministry, for example, releasing a statement today reiterating its firm opposition to an Israeli offensive on Rafah, as well as noting that the forced displacement of a civilian population constitutes a war crime under international law. You also have the EU foreign policy chief calling the evacuation order unacceptable. And all this as the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council has said that an Israeli military offensive in Rafah could lead to the deadliest phase of this conflict yet, which notably has already been an exceptionally deadly conflict, with upwards of 34,000 Palestinians killed since its start, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. And all of this as the US has been more measured in its response, but also Biden has still consistently urged Netanyahu against an assault on Rafah. With, in fact, this morning, the two speaking and Biden again expressing concerns about the human cost of such an offensive. But at the same time, Netanyahu has said that the Israeli military would conduct its offensive into Rafah with or without U.S. support. And in fact, in a speech yesterday marking Israel's National Holocaust Remembrance Day, he said,
I say to the leaders of the world, no amount of pressure, no decision by any international forum will stop Israel from defending itself. If Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone.
And building on that, Netanyahu has also notably said a Rafah offensive would take place with or without a hostage or ceasefire deal. And so with that, the news coming out today that Hamas has accepted a ceasefire proposal has to be taken with a grain of salt. Right, for one thing, it was reportedly a proposal put forward by Egypt and Qatar. And as of recording, the Israeli government has said that the country's military operation in Rafah will continue while it considers that proposal. With actually, as we were finishing up today's show, multiple explosions now being reported there. And notably, while the full details of this proposal haven't been released to the public as of recording, it's reportedly not within the framework put forward earlier by Israel. And that because it's apparently geared toward eventually negotiating a permanent calm that would lead to a full hostage release and Israeli troop withdrawal. Though the first phase would involve only limited hostage release and partial troop withdrawal. But it's still a potential problem because so far the Israeli government has only expressed a willingness to agree to a temporary ceasefire, with them basically having said that they're committed to continuing their military offensive in Gaza until it deems the group to have been completely eliminated. So basically we'll still have to wait to see what happens here. But as of recording, it doesn't appear that there's any reason that anyone should be getting their hopes up. Right? And notably, all of this playing out is not everyone in Israel agrees with their government. With, for example, this weekend, we saw thousands protesting in Tel Aviv, with them demanding that Netanyahu accept the ceasefire agreement with Hamas that would bring the remaining hostages home. Which on that note, it actually brings us to the protests that are happening here in the U.S. One of the latest incidents getting a lot of attention is what happened at the University of Mississippi, where you had dozens of students gathering to protest Israel's war in Gaza and calling for their school to be transparent in its potential dealings with Israel. Though notably, in this case, they were outnumbered by hundreds of counter-protesters. With outlets like The Guardian saying it was a scene that evoked memories of the resistance to the civil rights struggle in the U.S. South 6 decades earlier, and that because a number of the counter-protesters made what the school called offensive, hurtful, and unacceptable statements with racist overtones, with the most viral clip showing a group of white guys and a young black woman, with at least one of them seeming to make monkey gestures at the woman. With notably, they're the fraternity that student belonged to actually responding pretty swiftly, releasing a statement yesterday saying the responsible individual was removed from membership. And also notably with that, the university's chancellor has said that an investigation has been launched into one student and that more may follow. But this is, you have some Palestine supporters saying, you know, they're frustrated that those who might denounce their movement as anti-Semitic are failing to denounce anti-black racism that was seen there. Or with Georgia Rep. Mike Collins, for example, signing a letter to universities last December about combating anti-Semitism. But then a few days ago, he shared that video from the protest with the caption, "Ole Miss taking care of business," resulting in reactions like one commenter thanking him for confirming that he's a massive racist piece of shit. But then, as far as campus protests in the rest of the country, some of the biggest news there has to do with Columbia officially announcing that it's canceling its main commencement ceremony, with the school there saying that instead it would hold smaller ceremonies for each of its 19 colleges. And one of the main reasons cited was security. We also got news out of USC, which is the latest school where an encampment's been cleared by police, with the university and reporters for the school newspaper notably having conflicting accounts of what the encampment was like, or with the student reporters notably saying they had seen no evidence of the university's claims of outside agitators and an alleged assault on a police officer, with one also claiming that the encampment was safe until the police showed up. And then finally, regarding campus protests, there was the news out of the University of Chicago that they've suspended talks with protesters, with them now saying they want the encampment on its campus gone. And that's pretty notable because until now, they were one of the few colleges to allow dozens of tents to stay up. And the university's president there is saying it was because they wanted to show, quote, the greatest leeway possible for free expression. Which actually, on the topic of free expression, let's go back to the situation in Israel. Right? Because on top of all the other stuff that's going on, one of the big things being talked about is that the Israeli cabinet has officially voted to shut down Al Jazeera's operations in the country, with the shutdown involving closing the network's Jerusalem offices, confiscating its communication equipment, and blocking its broadcasts and access to its website. And while supporters of this argue that Al Jazeera poses a threat to national security, we saw the Foreign Press Association in Israel saying it is a cause for concern for all supporters of a free press, adding that Israel is joining a dubious club of authoritarian governments, and ending their statement by saying it is a dark day for democracy. And Al Jazeera, for their part, they of course have condemned the decision, noting that the closure of their offices ironically coincided with World Press Freedom Day, and arguing that this is a part of the government's effort to conceal its actions in the Gaza Strip. But as far as what is actually going to happen here, what is going to come from it, we're going to have to wait to see. It's all happening in real time, so very likely we'll be talking about this again tomorrow.
And then,
finally today, on a lighter note, we end on comment commentary. One, we dive into the comments on the last show and see what y'all had to say, my reactions to it, stuff like that. And two, I kind of more just shoot the shit with you on a friend-to-friend level. Which actually, to start with that, I will say I am disappointed. I saw the news that the Fall Guy is doing bad at the box office this weekend. Because, you know, in an entertainment landscape where we're always kind of whining that we want fewer comic book movies and endless sequels, we then often see those new original things failing, which then feeds the issue that we say that we have. But I gotta say, if you were on the fence about the Fall Guy, it's a fun movie. I give it a strong recommendation that goes beyond just, you know, Ryan Gosling being just randomly charming. With that said, let's dive into the comments on the last show. Starting with a comment that I actually wrote, because the last show was actually 3 hours late because YouTube's backend was busted. Though luckily, it ended up not killing that video. But just to verbalize the comments I made, if you ever think that a Philip DeFranco show should be up and it is not, one, I will almost always tweet about it. And two, you can always go to phillyd.tv. Because if YouTube's broken for us like it was Thursday, you can still watch the show over on Spotify or listen to it on Apple Podcasts, which are linked up at the top. There's also the ad-free version of the show that's uploaded to phillyd.tv that's processed there. So that is the paid version. And of course, there's the free ones, which is what I'm going to recommend to 99% of people. Also, as far as other comments, there was a lot of concern, but also kind of joking about the Boeing situation. Right, Organized Bonfire saying congrats to Agent 47 for receiving Boeing's Employee of the Year award. Generic Oxygen joking that Boeing just said they learned their lesson, but the lesson was that the other Boeing employee's death was too obvious. RG Beanie saying anyone speaking out about Boeing needs witness protection and just go off the grid, arguing this is hardly a coincidence. They are completely capable of this. They're also an arms manufacturer after all. And Overested Foresight adding, I was on the, okay, that's a weird coincidence, but suggesting Boeing was involved is too much a conspiracy theory boat right up until the second one. There was also pretty much universal agreement about my disgust of that father, with Doug Castle saying, as the dad of a six-year-old son, this story makes my blood boil. Phil hit the nail on the head. That man doesn't deserve freedom, let alone the name father. And Al Norris saying, one thing not mentioned in this video about Corey is that the mother had repeatedly made reports to CPS, but was brushed off and they never investigated. And noting before his death, she had filed for emergency custody, but was rejected. The systems failed that kid. And finally, most everyone was on the side of of MKBHD and this whole controversy and backlash. People like Knight saying he did nothing wrong. Can someone please help me understand why people are so mad at someone giving their opinion? And Brett James responding because AI bros are the new NFT bros. They can't take valid criticism. And Foresight popping in again saying people like to think that individuals have power over the world. Instead of this company failing due to providing a bad product and loss of hype, people like to distill complex situations into one man destroyed this company. And Chaz adding, I think Marquez's observation of everything being delivered barely functional is spot on, and it may even contribute to the way people seem to become so obsessed or emotionally invested in corporations. But that is where your Monday evening, Tuesday morning dive into the news is going to end today. But don't you worry, because remember, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here for more news tomorrow. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, that's babe. Need you every day. You light my oxygen.